B-Pod Studios.
Now.
That's hard on the ears.
More Tusher and Rich.
Ooh, that gets your back hair going.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oof, I don't care for that at all.
We are Tusher and Rich, and in my opinion, probably the greatest moment in TV history was when Will Smith completely lost his mind and went up and slapped at Chris Rock just for telling jokes. Nothing more. He was just telling jokes.
A joke that wasn't even horribly offensive.
No. And Will Smith started saying, hit him, and then he sat down and he said, get my wife's name out of your effing mouth. Chris Rock went a long time without commenting on it, and now he kind of has, but Will Smith has put out a video. He has been in deep prayer and self-reflection over the last few months.
Do you know what led to this? Like, why now? Is there any kind of indication as to, was there some story that came out where Will Smith wasn't getting jobs or something?
His PR team probably did like a math problem and figured out that now was the time.
You're probably exactly right, Fred. They're probably like, okay, when is the time where it's too close, where it just looks like he's desperate? And when's the time where it's too far away, where people are like, man, this is just weird? And you're right. They probably 48 hours after it happened said, you know what, July 30th is going to be the exact scientific date that this is going to work out the best for us. And maybe it's also on the heels of Chris Rock finally starting to talk a little bit about it in his stand-up acts. As a matter of fact, he was on tour, and I think this was when he was at the Fox Theater in Atlanta, and he said that everybody's trying to be a victim, was his whole rant. And he goes, if everybody claims to be a victim, then nobody will hear the real victims. Even me getting smacked by Suge Smith. He said, I went to work the next day. I got kids. Anyone who says words never hurt has never been punched in the face. And, you know, he gets very vague. And that's, you know, I think every show he starts adding just a little bit more to the Will Smith repertoire. But Fred, I have not heard all of this. I watched part of it, and I was like, you know what? I kind of want to hear it fresh with all you guys this morning. So
I've watched it. I have seen it.
And this is not at the red table. This is not Jada Pinkett's thing where she sits down.
He's sitting in the living room, and he was responding. I don't know where the questions came from, but he's responding to questions.
I'm sure the fans. I'm sure it wasn't the PR people who wrote those.
And so he starts every sentence by reading every thought by reading the question out loud that he's referring to.
Okay, so let's take a listen.
Why didn't you apologize to Chris in your acceptance speech? I was fogged out by that point. It's all fuzzy. I've reached out to Chris, and the message that came back is that he's not ready to talk, and when he is, he will reach out. So I will say to you, Chris, I apologize to you. My behavior was unacceptable, and I'm here whenever you're ready to talk. You know, I made a choice on my own from my own experiences, from my history with Chris. Jada had nothing to do with it. I'm sorry, babe, and say sorry to my kids and my family for the heat that I brought on all of us. Well,
you know, this is all getting stupid.
Yeah, no, it's still wonderful. It's still a man.
It's great, but I think about it. It's like, I mean, he didn't kill anyone. I know.
No. Yeah, almost he did. It's a guy whose career has been calculated. And the more I hear about this guy from people behind the scenes, the funnier this gets to me. This guy's whole nice guy thing is total BS.
No.
He is, it's total BS. It's been crafted by people. I guess he's not a nice guy. And this whole thing of, you know, based on my history with Chris Rock, is still leaving it like a little in Chris Rock's court.
What is your history?
Uh-huh. Well, I don't know. Why would he not, you know, why would he not keep going about what the history with Chris Rock is? I wonder, because there is none. And that, maybe Chris Rock told a joke before. I've heard he thought Chris Rock hit on Jada Pinkett, which I find very, very hard to believe. It, you know, this guy still can't take the blame. This guy's still sitting there. I just like seeing a big phony star fall. Like, I just like seeing his star fall across the sky. And this isn't going to help him. This isn't going to help him at all. I was in a fog. Yeah, you were in a fog. You lost your effing mind. And then you stood up there accepting an award for Best Picture, which they... So many things that I know I've been through this before, but so many things happened that night
that were just amazing.
So amazing.
I know.
He hits him, he yells and swears on TV, and they just let him sit there and they're like concerned for him. Then they turn around and hand him an effing Best Actor award, and he gets up there and cries and blubbers like a maniac. Then he goes out after the award show and starts dancing to his own songs at parties.
But before that, he almost tries to compare what he did to the guy he was playing, Serena Williams, yes. Venus Williams' father.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, love makes you do crazy things, just like, Richard. Like, no.
No, he should have been tackled, taken out of that award show, and banned forever. Instead, they just let him sit right back down because he was going to win Best Actor.
It's true, and it's funny, Fred. It's like, you know. It obviously, if you're a performer, you don't need to have people coming up there and hitting you, and that's something that's awful. And if you're a comedian, you should be again. I think it was just hearing this just now for the first time, maybe go, yeah, this is bad, but oh my God, he's talking as if he just, like, you know, accidentally plowed over a family in his car. You know, it's
okay. Listen, here's the deal. The damage to Chris Rock is not nearly what a family getting hit by someone would be. But the damage to your career, he stood up on international live television, hit a guy, then had a nervous breakdown while accepting an award.
It's insane.
Tommy Lee's still drawing for Motley Crue, and he beat the hell out of his wife.
Neil killed a guy.
Exactly. Like,
these are
far worse crimes.
Yeah, but to Will Smith, this is a fate worse than death. Having a career,
it's just
like this.
So embarrassing.
Yeah,
I mean, so very embarrassing. All right, continue.
I'm sorry, babe, and say sorry to my kids and my family for the heat that I brought on all of us. What would you say to the people who looked up to you before the slap, or people who expressed that you let them down? So there's two things. One, disappointing people is my central trauma. I hate when I let people down. So it hurts.
As opposed to all of us who feel really good when we let people down. I mean, Will takes it a lot harder than all of us.
Whoa. People keep asking me,
what's up with our hero?
Yeah, exactly.
No, what happened is that you have something going on in your life, and you have something going on with your relationship that has made you completely lose your mind. You've lost total track of reality, and we know why. Because you can get away with slapping a guy on national television and then just sit right back down in your seat, carry on with swears and everything else you're not allowed to say on TV, and then go and accept an award where you babble and cry like a bitch and then compare yourself to Serena Williams' dad.
And shows them, they're like, no.
And then the Williams family's like, what the hell are you bringing us into this? We didn't hit anybody. All right, continue.
I hate when I let people down. So it hurts. It hurts me psychologically and emotionally to know I didn't live up to people's image and impression of me. The work I'm trying to do is I am deeply remorseful, and I'm trying to be remorseful without being ashamed of myself. Right? Yeah. I'm human. I made a mistake, and I'm trying not to think of myself as a piece. So I would say to those people,
he called himself a piece of ass.
Yeah. Oh,
okay. But that's interesting, because you should think of yourself as a piece of ass for a very long time. I mean, you should be ruminating over this for more than a couple of months. Like, it's by no means time to move on from it. I mean, it's time. This should weigh heavily on you for quite some time. I mean, you threw it all away. I honestly don't see him coming back to nearly the amount of fame that he was enjoying before.
Well, he was kind of in a lull career-wise, except for the Oscar. I mean, that was right. That kind of came out of nowhere. Think about the last few movies he had made weren't really that nobody. What was the one where it was him versus young him or old him versus young him
out?
And there was like another one. There was a few movies that he did that no one was really seeing. So. I mean, he'll be back, and he'll be making movies, and people will want to see him again. But
don't doubt that he'll make movies, but he will never touch that level of fame because he was one of these, like, you know, what would you say, two or three guys that was, like, universally loved by everyone. Now, I hated the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but I always assumed if you met Will Smith, like, he'd be kind of like a dorky, like, all right guy. Mm-hmm. Like I'm out on Will Smith for the rest of his career. That I'd almost rather you do anything than do that. I've made a fool of myself, but not like that. Woo! All right, continue.
As a piece. So I would say to those people, I know it was confusing. I know it was shocking.
No. It was not confusing.
I thought it was a hero.
Pretty obvious.
It was very shocking. I will give you that. It's probably the most shocking thing I've ever seen on television. I'll give you that, but it was not confusing. What was confusing is you sat right back down and just started heckling the stage again.
Yes.
And the only reaction from people was to coddle you and put their arms around you and make sure you were okay.
It was confusing. I know it was shocking, but I promise you I am deeply devoted and committed to putting light and love and joy into the world.
If you hang on,
I promise.
I'll make Wild Wild West 2.
Sure.
And bring you a lot of light and love. You know, what I did, Rich, was I went out there and made these movies just for the only reason was to bring light and love to people. You know, forget the billions of dollars in career earnings I've had.
I want to bring world peace by once again reuniting a fat guy like Kevin James with a hot girl in Hitch.
Yeah. I mean, listen, but didn't that teach us that anything was possible?
Putting light and love and joy into the world. If you hang on, I promise we'll be able to be friends again.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's just great.
I don't know you, and I never will.
If you hang on, I promise we'll be able to be friends again.
I'm hanging on. I'm hanging on, Will. Let's be friends.
Hanging on until you do what? Like invent a time machine?
If you hang on, I promise we'll be able to be friends again.
Bad Boys 4.
Invent a time machine? Is that what you said? You're gonna love
me. All right, I'm asking you this. If you're a big-time producer, and there's, you know, Tom Cruise, and there's... Chris Evans, and there's all these guys. Like, I told you the story that the guy told me about the dude from Top Gun, like the Goose's kid. Mm-hmm. Like how he was starting
Miles Teller.
Like it would have been way better for him if he was like at all normal, like on set. Like, so if I so say like I'm dealing with like the very elite, right? Like the, mm-hmm. Big blockbuster guy. I'm not hiring Will Smith now.
No, you hire Will Smith not as a lead, but maybe as like a third, fourth in the cast.
Right. Because, Rich? Because if I'm making a blockbuster, I don't need that. I don't need Will Smith.
Or if you are a like smaller independent film,
sure.
You give him the lead to get maybe a little bit of buzz. And he's a good actor. I mean, enough to win an Oscar. He won Best Actor. So.
Yeah, I've heard one. And I think he's a good actor, too. But he was not good in that movie. But if it was mutually beneficial, and I thought, all right, I have a rare opportunity to deal with someone who's incredibly charismatic when they're not acting like a psycho, mm-hmm. and I'm making this independent film, and, you know, this is a once-a-lifetime opportunity to do it, yeah. My point is, though, if I'm making, you know, if I'm making, like, look at me, it's a CGI film with aliens, I'm not putting him in it.
No, he's not going to be star of a Marvel film, you know.
I'm not putting him in anything.
Yeah.
I mean, and if I have to cast a black guy, I'm getting the kid from Creed. There's a bunch of people.
Michael B. Jordan.
Right.
Is there a way?
Kevin Hart.
Yeah. Is there a way you can do like another Bad Boys movie with him?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. You could.
I wouldn't.
Bad Boys 4. You could do it. Those movies make tons of money, and I think that people would see it if he was in it. Now, that he could do, and that might be the only movie they could make a sequel to that would be successful, is if it was Bad Boys 4.
If I had a million scripts on my desk for sequels, I wouldn't make Bad Boys 4. That would not be my choice right now. I mean, get back to me in 2 years, but as it sits right now, I mean, they put all his projects on hiatus. Like, they're not making them. He had stuff that was supposed to be being made, and they're not making them. I mean, that is bad. It's not the worst thing a celebrity's ever done by any stretch of the imagination, but it just reflected. Part of the problem for him is it reflected so poorly on Hollywood, and just like the system of, like, you can get away with anything.
Yeah,
you can get frankly get away with anything.
And the fact that Chris Rock's letting him hang is just—it's great. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, because he's furious, as I would be too. I mean, you went up to me, you heckled me when I'm up in front of an international audience, probably nervous out of my mind, and beyond the slap, which Rock, you know, took, and I'm sure he's fine. It's the idea that you heckled me,
and then I'm pissed at
Hollywood because you all sat there and still gave him the award. Anyway, I thought it was such a wonderful day when that happened. I can't tell you. I mean, if you root for chaos, as we often do, I mean, that was it personified. All right, very good, guys. We will be back. Bob Ryan will join us, and we will talk to him about his relationship with Bill Russell, the good, the bad, his feelings. I'm interested in his feelings on Boston towards the end of his life. I know he wasn't the world's biggest fan for a long time. I know he wouldn't go to he wouldn't talk on the ESPN top 50 athletes of the 20th century. I know that there were some things that he still held grudges for. Interested to hear about that. If there was any healing process with him, we'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
It's TMR.
It really is just a reality check of just how no one cares.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boy, this is such a great bunch of guys, you know, and it's just been so fabulous the way they played for me. And it sounds all corny, you know, start talking like that, but I told these guys before the game, I don't care what happens, I wouldn't trade you guys for any guys in the world. It's just my guys. These guys play ball for me, and like, they're such a great bunch of guys. I just can't say enough about the guys.
We are Tucker and Rich, a man who's done our show many, many times. His first love is baseball, and I have read the vast majority of In Scoring Position, where he goes through his very full scorecard book, as he has been to many, many games, some classic ones in there. He also has covered the late Bill Russell, who died yesterday. Bob Ryan joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Bob, hello.
Good morning. Good morning to you.
Is this a hard day for you? Were you very close to Mr. Russell?
I was not close at all, but I had a nice acquaintanceship that basically blossomed in the 80s when he was doing his broadcasting. I first met him. I did not cover him as a player. My first year on the beat was 69-70, which is the year after he retired. But I got to meet him when he coached the Seattle Supersonics, and he was a very gracious guy. And then when he was doing his ABC broadcasting during the 80s, I would see him frequently and develop a nice little acquaintanceship with him. So that I'm not going to claim any great insight, you know, personal closeness, but I certainly admired him as we all should.
Bob, how did Bill's relationship with Boston evolve?
It was tedious, to say the least. He spoke out against Boston after he was retired. I believe he would have phrased it in the, quote, flea bag of racism, unquote. I'm not sure exactly when he uttered that statement, but that's in the books that he said it. We know that he had the reprehensible incident in which his house was broken into in Reading, and someone smeared feces on his wall. He had a kind of a standoffish relationship with the city. As when he played, he publicly declared and final that he only owed the public a performance. We know he habitually did not routinely sign autographs. He tried to open a business here and restaurant business and all that. But finally, in 1999, the city did right by him and had a tremendous tremendous honor ceremony at the Garden, solo at the Garden, and honored him the way he should have been. And then finally, of course, we had a statue in City Hall Plaza ceremony a number of years ago. But it took a while, and he came to grips with, you know, that. But it wasn't his favorite place, to be honest. Let's face it. And he never made a secret about that.
Now, Bob, you know, for a lot of us, we didn't get to ever see him play live. And there's a lot of people listening who obviously never saw him play live. You've seen the numbers. You've heard the talk, obviously, you know, how many championships he won. But can you kind of just paint a picture of just how dominant he was on those Celtics teams?
The idea, first of all, he was ahead of his time in athletic terms. If he's talking about running and jumping and lateral mobility and athletic attributes, he was very much a 21st century athlete who happened to be born in 1930, whatever, five, and coming to the NBA in 1956. He was absolutely a ahead of his time athlete. As he once told me, he could jump up and he could touch the rim with his, he could kick the rim, not touch the rim, he could kick. He could kick the rim. He was a high jumper, you know, and of renown, and he was a great athlete in general terms. Okay. Before Bill Russell, there were occasional times that someone would actually block a shot, but it was not an integral part of the game. He basically made it an art form and introduced it into the game and made it a vital part of his game at a time when no one else was doing that. Instead of the way that the younger players today show off by knocking the shot when they block it out of bounds, thereby giving possession back to the team that they are playing, and often the team scoring and they're negating the whole purpose, Bill tried very hard and often succeeded in keeping the ball in play to start a fast break. Tom Heinsohn told me he would say he would pop it. He had a technique. He had an incredible technique to keep the ball in play after we blocked the shot and start numerous fast breaks. He intimidated people. He intimidated the league. He was the roadblock for teams and people winning championships for that 13 years. Wilt Chamberlain won one championship in the years against Russell. Jerry West and Elgin Baylor won none. Bob Pettit won one. And that was when Russell was hurt. These great players were blocked. West lost six times in the 60s to Russell. And don't think it doesn't kill him. And I'll tell you, he'll moan about it today. Russell was the roadblock. And the Cincinnati Royals had a really good team in those days with Oscar Robertson and Wayne Embry and Jack Twyman. They couldn't get by the Celtics. Nobody could get by the Celtics. And that meant nobody could get by Russell. He was the linchpin of that team. He absolutely was the human obstacle to everybody else in the league.
Bob Ryan, I was reading this article from Frank DeFord yesterday that was about 15 years old, and you mentioned, the blocking shots. Frank was writing about how Bill's college coach didn't want him jumping, that he thought that defense should be played on the ground, which sounds wild, but so... And then Bill was like, well, it's working. I mean, what do you want me to do about it? So he kind of redefined the way basketball was played in a way.
He did. And there were certain few players that had an imprint on the game that they, by their own personal style of play, influenced how the game would be played. The first one was Hank Lozetti, who gave us the one-hand shot, literally, back in the 30s. He invented it. Everybody knows it. And Russell on defense, as I said earlier, by putting the block shot and that instant defensive intimidation and changed the concept of how defense could be played. I like that. Very laughable that Phil Wooper, tried to put a harness on this incredible foot. He didn't understand. And, you know, by the way, when he came into the league in 56, the way he did, you know, which he was not the first pick in the draft because he just wasn't. And not everybody was ready to think that he was going to have this kind of an impact. He was a different kind of a center. The concept of the center in those days was George Mikan shooting hook shots, period. And they didn't have any, and maybe grabbing an occasional rebound. Russell had a whole new dimension, and he influenced the way games played to this day.
Bob, is it fair to say that he was arguably the best player in the history of the NBA before Larry and Magic and Michael and LeBron came in?
Here's the thing in this argument, and this is the way I frame it. The nature of the game is such that it's an apple-orange thing when you're talking about centers and other position players. When you talk about greatest player, you're talking about all around a player who does passes, dribbles, shoots, rebounds. That's not going to be a center. Center's going to, and Russell was a pure center. So he had the most influential player, for sure, and he's among the handful of greatest players, but all-around player, you know, you're talking now about the Michael Jordans and the LeBron Jameses and the Magics and the Birds of the world, and the Antetokounmpo today, and the Durants of the modern game, and even Stephon Curry. But so it's a different argument. If you want to talk about centers, there's three centers standing above everybody else: Wilt, Chamberlain, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Bill Russell. And Bill Russell was the first and set the template for how the game could be played. But that argument is irresolvable if people don't understand. You cannot compare the apple of a center with the orange of a other position player.
Was he a trash talker? Because he seems like the nicest guy, and he's got that laugh and everything like that. Like, was he on the court? Was he a trash talker?
Not really. Not that I know of, no. It may have been. And even with Wilt, I don't think he didn't engage in dialogue when he was playing all those games against Wilt that I know of. No, that wasn't part of the deal.
Yeah, because those Wilt, when you just see the video of those two together, it's like King Kong versus Godzilla. It's just these two monsters just going back and forth against each other. Yeah, it's a new brand of dinosaur.
It is. And let me just frame the relations to the rivalry. Bird and Magic were rivals, and they were. They played against each other, including in their one. Wilt and Russell played. Sitting for 140 years, not the exhibition that they played. And in those days, the exhibition season, and I'm not making this up, 15 to 20 games. And you have to play the number of times exhibition season over those 10 years, as well as the 142 times they played together. There has been an individual rivalry in football.
All right. Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining us. We were having our everyday 8:30 phone trouble. It's not you, it's us.
Yes,
but we do appreciate that, and I do want to encourage people to go out and get Bob's book that is In Scoring Position, that is out there now. 40 years of a baseball life. Bob Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. Sorry we had a little technical issue. We'll talk to you soon.
Fine. Thanks for having me, guys.
You're the best, Bob. Thanks, man.
I appreciate it. There you go.
Damn it.
Rich's face when that happens.
I hate it. It's the rudest thing you can do to a guest, especially when he's in the middle of a story. I hate it. And I know it's going to be gone in about, what, 2 weeks when we're at the new place?
But. You got that email on Friday, didn't you?
Did you get the email? It's
good. I hate that. It's the 8:30. Because I know it's like some dumb ticket giveaway for some crap show.
Rich, come on, it's Disney. You don't want to go on a Disney cruise or a...
I just
see Rod Stewart this weekend at the Xfinity Center.
Nice. You know what? That's on us, though. I mean, that one, we know. We know what happens at 8:30. I'm not going to... It pisses me off every time. So there you go.
Yeah, I'm guessing I'm setting a September date. I'm thinking after Labor Day is when we're in the new digs.
I'm leaning in Fred's direction now. I mean, I was confident because they want to get everything set up before Patriot season.
No,
I get it. But
no one's fault. But I'll tell you this, is that order anything right now and you're looking at major delays.
I mean, did you get your car yet? Did you get your...
No.
No.
No, but I called him last week, and I was sent to a number with no answering machine message. And
oh, good.
I left a message.
Fred, they're everywhere now. They're everywhere on the road. There's no reason you shouldn't have yours.
I know.
I mean, what do you want from me? I don't have it. I mean, and they won't talk to me at the dealership.
Oh, Jesus.
So I'm starting to think, what if the dealership flipped it? And then
yeah, like sold for it for like $20,000 more or something right now.
Because the problem is I have the VIN number of what is to be my car, so that would be not in their best interest because I'm walking around with the VIN number.
They won't call you back?
No, Rich, believe it or not. They're not calling me back.
Somebody takes, you know, tens of thousands of dollars from me. They better at least call me back.
They have
That's
not taken
crazy.
Tens of thousands of dollars yet. They're supposed to, but not yet.
Okay.
They've taken $4,000 from me. All right. We will be back. Joining us at 9 o'clock, Bob Soucy. Some people are very much enjoying what they're seeing at camp, and some people are thinking it's for the birds, if you know what I'm saying. We will be back in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
It's called the Toucher and Rich Show, but you can't forget Waller.
You explain it to me, John. Explain
honey,
it.
Honey, did you call him honey?
I did. This is like the argument I had with my wife last night.
Pull it. Now, more Toucher and Rich.
Toucher and Rich, and wow, when is the last time we had not one, but two breaking news sounders in the same show?
Yeah, how about that, huh?
How about that? We got the sports gambling thing this morning, even though it kind of broke like 45 minutes or so before we went on the air.
Still,
but still,
we were the first people to say anything about it, so that's a good thing.
You bet your buttons. And then we just had, of course, what happened with the decision with Deshaun Watson, and the six games is what the arbitrator has given him. But now the NFL gets to decide whether that is indeed enough. And as you were saying before, John, Roger Goodell does not want anyone. He wants him gone for a while. He wants to make a statement.
Goodell wants an indefinite suspension, which, you know, kind of means, okay, suspended for a year and then reevaluate. I think what the arbitrator did, you can't give him four because that's what Tom Brady got for allegedly deflating football. So it has to be more than that. You want it to be long enough to satisfy the NFL, but short enough so that the player won't appeal. And, I mean, I thought eight was the magic number, but six, I think, is in the right ballpark.
So as you were saying in your headlines, week six is when the Patriots would play the Browns, so he's definitely going to be out for that game.
Correct.
And Burt Breer kind of puts things in historical perspective as to why the six games number. And he said, if you want precedent, Deshaun Watson's six-game suspension mirrors past penalties for Ezekiel Elliott and Ben Roethlisberger. Watson's case, like those other two, lacked criminal charges. The only thing I would say, the one little asterisk I'd put on that is that there's like 23 extra women in Deshaun's
yes,
case.
Right.
It's not just like a one-off thing where there wasn't any, you know, criminal charges. There's a whole lot of these. There's like 24 of them. So it seems more extreme, but I guess we'll find out. I don't know if it'll be by the end of the day today, but I'm sure the NFL is going to be on it, and you're going to get something fairly soon. I'm with you, John. I think they're going to say indefinitely, and maybe after eight games, they might say, okay, you can come back. But it's feeling like a year, isn't it? Isn't it feeling
like
a year?
Well, no, they're going to go with what the lady
said. Well, that's the thing. The NFL, in order to get that, the NFL has to appeal, and they have 3 days to do so. The union and Watson have already said they were not going to appeal. They said this last night, so I think they got the heads up that something like this was coming. But the NFL has 3 days to appeal this particular ruling, and then we go right back to where we started
from. Which they're expected
to, right?
Right now,
if nothing happens, it's six, it's set in stone.
But I thought the expectation was that the NFL was going to appeal.
Well, the NFL wanted longer. Now they have to go back and say, okay, can we live with six games?
No, and I don't know. They have to think, do we want to go against the union or do we want to just let this thing lie? And I am not under the opinion that they are going to appeal this ruling.
I thought I'd heard that, but you're probably right. You know what they're doing probably right now is they are sticking their finger in the wind, and they are trying to figure out what public opinion is saying about this.
Yeah.
Are they all saying, hey, you know what? He had a whole year off also, and now you know the six on top of it, he served his time. Are people cool with it? Is there outrage? If there's outrage, God knows that the NFL loves to completely react to that and overreact. So we're going to find out. You know, right now, they're looking, I'm sure, at social media. They're watching the talking heads, and they want to see what the reaction is before they make their decision.
But they agree. Read an independent arbiter, and if the independent arbiter comes with this ruling, what they were afraid of, they wanted him not to play this season, but what they were really afraid of, it was going to be short. So I don't know what other, I mean, they're going to appeal an independent arbiter that they helped get.
Yeah, have every right to. Yeah,
they have a right to do it.
Yeah, I know they have a right to do it, but it's just going to piss the union off. And then you get another arbiter, and then what if they go, all right, one game?
Yeah. There is that danger, especially factoring in that Watson didn't play at all last season, even though he got paid. Watson didn't play.
I don't know why you hire an independent arbiter, and then the union agrees to it, and the independent arbiter says something you don't like.
Then why didn't the NFL come out and say that we'll agree to whatever they come out with, which they have not?
Because I don't know what interest of theirs that would be. And so, I mean, I don't know. I would find it very difficult for them to go back. Maybe they will, but it just seems like you're playing with fire, that you're just going to piss off the union for really no reason.
Two breaking news sounders, though, on the same day. We could have done three if you wanted to go Jake Bailey reaching his four-year $13 million contract.
Contract extension.
We do have standards, all right? These were two real breaking news sounders. Yeah.
Usually we hear something about farts or something right before
this. Sports news.
What is this?
Instant oil change. Wow, Jake Bailey signed a four-year contract.
We're making up for lost Jake
yes,
Bailey time?
Yes. Yeah, no,
I'm
nice.
Not counting it. Well, there's done. Integrity on the Toucher and Rich show.
Of course.
But, I mean, I was looking forward to like a fart thing at like 5 or at 6:02, and it was a big breaking news sounder.
Yeah.
With the sports gambling, and then there's another breaking news sounder, and it's about Deshaun Watson. I mean, you got to stay glued to the twit machine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all.
See, I do want to find out how Lifshatz is feeling this morning. I really want to find out. Because if he's happy, then this is the greatest bill ever that just passed.
He's never happy.
I know. That's why I'm saying. It's like he finds a way to be down on everything. So if he's actually in a good mood, then that means, wow, this is way better than I thought it was going to be. Now, it does
do
kind of
think
make...
that, do you think that his excitement about it being legal would be trumped by the fact that he was wrong?
See, that's the other thing I was thinking about, is if he comes on here, it will almost, he'll have to admit that he was wrong like this whole time about whether or not it would pass. Everyone was wrong. I don't think anybody thought it was going to pass.
I know, but not all of us are saying that we're always right.
Right. We're not saying that we have inside information saying that it's not
going to
pass.
No, I had no idea what was going on with sports betting.
Right, I just listened to the guys and go, sure.
Now, it helps our company, but it wasn't like I was living and dying by its passage.
I was just used to it not passing. I was like, all right, yeah, tell me when it's passed. And then finally this morning, oh crap. Mm-hmm. And then it looked better than we all thought it was going to, with all the different, you know, college gambling and the ability for them to advertise, and then horse racing. Hey. So it's a pants-off, dance-off. It's basically everything you want in this thing.
Yeah, I heard that it was going to pass, but it was going to be something you didn't want to pass. Because once they give in, then there's no going back. Like, for instance, I heard that if they didn't allow college wagering, they were never going to go back and allow it. Like, so there were some proposals that you're better off just not getting passed and biding your time.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what the Schatzenator is going to say about this. I mean, he was working the phones and talking to all the people high up there and, you know, in the mass gov. But, You know, they're all probably, I mean, I don't know. Don't they? They probably all congregate at certain bars by City Hall, aren't they? Probably out there right now. Maybe. They're up all night, you know, relaxing, having some, you know, having some natural lights and just like, just seeing how things are
natty
going.
Lights. You are going to laugh when you find out how fast this thing gets into motion the second pen goes to paper from Charlie Baker. Like, the minute he signs this, like, you're going to be able to download the app, and it's ready to go. And you're going to be able to walk right up to the place at the Encore and place a bet. Like, everything has been ready to go for, like, a year and a half. They've been waiting for this moment, like a button that you're going to press,
plus,
and it's going to be live.
If you have DirecTV, you get a sweet channel that's just... DraftKings telling you over and over again how to do it. Mm-hmm. My parents have this like sweet channel that's just this guy like, what are you talking about? I can't do this. And it's 24 hours a day of how to use DraftKings. I have it. I have DraftKings.
I know this channel. I know this channel. I have a friend of mine that has this channel.
I've used it in Tennessee.
Oh, so you've used it to actually do sports betting before?
I have, and I lost interest in it within 2 minutes. But nonetheless, that was college bowl season. So, I haven't had it during the NFL season or when real things were going on.
I've just done like daily fantasy, and I'm assuming there's going to be all of a sudden a new button on there
that takes you to a new thing. Since we're on Twitch, I can show you the app myself. I can show you what it looks like. It's a different app. It's not the same app. Let's see here. Let's make sure nothing incriminating. Right here. The DraftKings sportsbook.
I see.
In
okay.
Green.
It is. Excellent.
Yeah. It's Sportsbook and Casino. Mm-hmm. The app.
I knew there was this. That's right. That's cool. Well,
very easy to download.
Very soon. Very soon. I would think within the next like 2 weeks. Is that what we're hearing, Charlie Baker? I mean, the one of the representatives came out and said that it could be ready to go by the beginning of football season. So I'm assuming it's not going to take too long for him to sign something he already agreed to sign. Charlie Baker said he would do it once it passed. So let's go.
And look at if you had whatever sales guys got DraftKings. Woo-wee.
That's right.
You are in the money now.
Turn on that revenue hose. Turn it on. Shower us with cash.
I know. And Rich is the guy who's got the endorsement. Maybe they spread that endorsement around a little bit. All right. Bob Soucy has been at Patriots camp every day. We will be joined by him in just a moment. Wow, my voice.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Goodness gracious.
Sneeze.
Okay.
We'll be joined by him in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.